Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall. Welcome back. Richard, we just finished an interview with Brent Williams from New Zealand, but he wasn't in New Zealand when we were talking to him.
Where was he?
He was in England.
England.
So, but this was a great conversation. Brent recently published a book called Out of the Woods about his journey in life in dealing with depression. But it's not just any old book about a person dealing with depression. He chose to present it as a graphic novel,
right?
Which I think was a wonderful choice.
Which is another name for a comic book.
Sort of. Like a comic book.
Yes,
but the images are very rich, very... It just evokes emotion.
When I first started to look through it, I was struck by the illustrations because they're unbelievably well done.
Yeah. Okay.
Then I started flipping through, sort of reading it casually, you know, just to get an idea of what it was before I... It is a compelling read.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought I would just sort of skim through it, you know, and look at it and then read it later.
Yeah.
Once I started reading it, I just got completely engrossed in the book.
Yeah.
And you want to see where it's going and how he dealt with certain things. This is really... Robert Sapolsky is a neuroscientist who wrote a book about the brain and about stress. And he was complimentary. And he's right. It's a compelling read. It's an important contribution to the whole area of depression.
Yeah. And what's fascinating, I think, is that, you know, Brent is not a mental health expert.
No.
He's not a person who has researched and studied depression or what happens in the brain when one's depressed. He is a person who experienced it, and interestingly enough, did not start experiencing it until adulthood.
That's right. This was adult onset depression.
Right.
Apparently had few or no symptoms all through his, into his 20s, even after he was married and had his own children.
Right.
So it's adult onset depression, and an absolutely fascinating account.
Yeah.
Fascinating and courageous.
Right.
Was able to present his experience with this disorder.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And he was working as an attorney.
He was trained as an attorney.
Yeah,
right.
human rights attorney, and as a filmmaker. And we didn't even get to get into the stuff that he did as a filmmaker. So
we should have him come back.
We're definitely going to have to talk to him again.
Talk about the other parts of his life.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's a great. It's a great book, and I would definitely encourage you to get out there and get it. I'll have a link to the Amazon page in the show notes, so you can check that out, as well as the website for the book.
Right, his website. If you are experiencing depression, or you think you might be experiencing depression, I would really recommend this.
Mm-hmm.
So many of these books, there's a book written by a couple of authors who have experienced depression, but it's difficult to read those kind of longer books,
even though
they address the issue from the patient's point of view. This book is easy to handle.
Right.
You can take it in small pieces.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a text.
Right.
It's a graphic novel, and so it's easy to manage. But if you think you're experiencing depression, I would highly recommend this as a starter.
Definitely. Definitely. So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely check this book out.
Right.
It's well written. The illustrations are fantastic. And if you watch this on YouTube, we're going to put in some of the images in the video so that you can see what it looks like.
Oh.
But it's engaging. It really captures. And I like how he talked about how he and the illustrator worked together to really,
you know, there are some panels that have no words in it. And he said it was because it didn't need words.
Didn't need it.
The illustration really depicts what was happening. And so
the illustrator was able to capture his feelings and his moods.
Yeah. So it's a fantastic read, fantastic interview. So please listen in. Let us know what you think. And please, you know, get his book and follow what he's doing on his website.
Yeah, and we say if you're struggling, if you have a family member who's struggling with depression, it's an excellent book to begin with.
Yeah.
This is a good start.
Absolutely. So, all right.
Take a look.
Enjoy the podcast. There you are.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So, what it was, sorry about that. I'm pretty new to this. First time I've done a Google is that it was set for my internal speakers, and I'm using these ones. Is it okay to use these speakers?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's probably better sound quality because usually the inbuilt one is pretty hopeless on my little MacBook.
Yes.
Just let me just
you sound terrific.
Put my phone on airplane mode. Ready to go. Greetings.
All right.
That was a bit of stress.
Well, good morning. We're so excited to talk with you. You know, I heard from Lauren last week, and I know we kind of threw everything together really quickly, but it's great that she reached out and we were able to connect.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's really good.
Yeah. So I'm Bernie, and this is Richard, and it's just terrific to meet you.
Yes.
Yeah.
After reading the book, I wanted to get another word than reading the book, tromping through the book. It was a wonderful experience for me. So I want to commend you. It's very well done. Very well done.
Really appreciate it.
It's a wonderful contribution. I'll be using it tomorrow, in fact, with a patient of mine. Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent.
Yeah. So we're really looking forward to exploring it in a little more detail with you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So as we're getting started, tell us a little bit about yourself. You, your background is not exactly what I was expecting for someone who wrote a book about depression. So tell us a little bit about your background and history.
My background was community law. So I set up a community law center in Wellington and focused my efforts in helping people who really were excluded from traditional legal, access to traditional legal things, lawyers, processes, courts. So we really focused on, you know, people like street kids, women that weren't getting protection orders, and immigrants, tenants, all those sorts of areas. And of course, a lot of them had issues with reading. Either English was their second language, or they hadn't done much schooling. Whatever the issues were, it was sort of a common thing. So we tried to communicate complicated legal concepts and rights and issues in two ways: one, through illustrations, and secondly, using stories. So in a way, I cut my teeth in this area. So when I came to be ill myself, and emerged wanting to write about it and do something about it, it was sort of quite natural that I went back to the very things that I used, in my career, which was illustration and personal stories. But this time it was about my own story. Mm-hmm. You know, all my career I'd been doing other people's stories. I'd been on the other side of the camera, because I got into videos as just another good way of communicating things to people, but it always been about other people's stories, and I was always on the other side of the camera. So this book, I put myself very squarely into the picture and put myself on the other side of the lens, if you like.
Well, yeah, I have to tell you, as I was reading it, in the first third, or probably about the first third of the book, I was thinking, well, this sounds a little autobiographical. And then the second question I had was, I wonder what this guy does for a living. And do lawyers have the same reputation in New Zealand as they do in America?
Pretty much, no, yes.
Okay. Well, never mind then.
But the joke, I think the American joke about, why do they use lawyers in experiments? Yes, does the rounds here.
So I went, oh my gosh, he's an attorney. But the question I have is, it must have taken you some courage to make this decision to open this up so that all of us could look at it. Was it a difficult decision, or what thought process did you go through?
Well, yeah, I took little baby steps all the way through the process, to be honest. I didn't just wake up and think, I've got to do this. You know, okay. I started journal writing when I was depressed.
Mm.
Picked up a book and started writing about my deepest fears and my concerns and my experiences and my thoughts and my mind, which was driving me, you know, round and round and round and round in crazy circles at the time. So I had no idea I was writing a book then, but I wrote and I wrote and I wrote, and I hadn't really written before. So this was a new thing for me, but being isolated on my own, not wishing to get help from anybody, I turned to journal writing as a way I could express the things that were happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
Then I started when I was sort of more prepared to get help, I started finding out, I started reading stuff. Actually, the first things I read were in a sort of a more technical nature, were newsletters of American medical schools, like Tufts University and Harvard and other places that wrote little, quite simple newsletter thing, health newsletters, and they'd have little bits about things that would help people with depression.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of had an impact on me. So I started reading those, and I incorporated that into my writing. So it wasn't just about my experience now. It was about the things I was learning, the things I was doing, the things that were really working. And slowly this evolved into my own efforts to offer something to other people because they were working. Wow. And so I wrote about them. I wrote about them for others. I was still really writing for myself, totally. Mm-hmm. But it helped to think that I was helping somebody else. It sort of gave me some purpose again in life, which had certainly lost all its meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started writing my own story up, and it was slow and I was tentative. And the first draft, for example, had no mention of my father.
Mm-hmm.
Got to the end of it, thought, wow, I've written it. And I remember sitting in front of my therapist after showing it to her, and she very wisely said to me, there's no mention of your father. Why is that? And I just went, I can't write it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I paused, went home and picked up my pen and started writing. Mm-hmm. And I rewrote the whole thing.
Wow.
And over many weeks, the story was far more personal. And it did include my father, who had a huge influence in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I was still writing this book for myself. It was a way of monitoring my own progress, of really checking in. Is this really working? What's going on here for me? What's the research out there? It was a long process, took many years to write the book, and that really helped me. It helped me stay honest and helped me do a lot more research and find out what was because usually I found out if there was something that was working for me, there was some research out there which suggested it was also helping others, which was really encouraging. And then I guess the next step was, what do I do with this? Well, do I publish it? And I guess that was the next step. And then, do I launch it? And yes, just a couple of weeks ago, I stood up in front of 200 friends, colleagues, family members who had not seen this book. They knew I was doing something, but I kept it pretty quiet.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was launching it to the world. And then I was being interviewed, and I was on television and radio in my home country. And, you know, that, if you like, was one more huge step in me coming out and saying I had been depressed. I'd had this life, you know, this life-changing event which had an enormous impact on my life, which I had hidden and was ashamed to talk about for so many years. So, you know, the book has done this amazing job for me. It has been, it's been a process, and it's been a process over many years.
So it sounds like, was it the case for you that journal writing was just sort of a natural thing to do? It sounds like you started doing that before you were researching what to do about depression or ways to manage depression. It sounds like that was just sort of a an intuitive type of thing that you just started to pick up?
Yeah, it was. I started actually writing poetry, which I'd never written before. So there was something that depression had unleashed something in me that was quite new, and it was expressing in ways I hadn't done before. So, and I always got a little bit of, there was always a bit of uplift from expressing myself, writing something, expressing it in poetry or prose or whatever it was, or even doing a very simple little illustration in my book to describe how I felt. I was amazed how I had nothing to say, but when I started writing, it poured out, and it made me feel better at the end of that process. And sometimes I remember lying in bed with no motivation to get up and face the world, but I'd look over and I'd see my pad and my pen sitting there on the little table, and I would get up and I would just reach over, grab it, sit down and start writing. And it helped, and then it gave me a little bit of strength to start my day.
Terrific, terrific.
Brent, you must have had feelings, or what we would call symptoms, before you identified what it was. How did you come to the conclusion that you were struggling with depression?
Oh, I was so slow. You know, I'd interviewed people for a video about different videos about mental health. I had published a book called Mental Health and the Law. You would have thought that I had some idea of what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
But I absolutely had no idea. I just was in such a state of denial and running away that I missed it completely. I missed early diagnosis. I missed getting help. And they were really harmful things when I look back now. I mean, depression really got a hold. And had I acted before, I could have actually, I think, had a better chance. And I'm talking about, I went to my doctor and I got diagnosed with depression. I went to a psychiatrist and got diagnosed with depression. You know, they described it as classic major depression. And I still was running and still denying that that's what I had, still finding some other label, some other diagnosis, and looking for somebody who would take away this thing that I had. And so it took me many years before I actually faced it, got a therapist, went and sat, you know, twice a week with her and acknowledged what I had and worked through it.
Wow. Yeah, that's fairly typical of all of us. For some reason, we don't want to face this. But I wondered what your process was, that you finally said, okay, this is what I'm dealing with. This is what it is. And that began the journey.
Okay. I think it was a particular low point when I had run out of options. Mm. I'd been to so many different people. I'd tried so much self-diagnosis, self-medication, options, gone to so many different alternative practitioners who all attacked various parts of my body in different ways, but no one said, you know, there's a bigger thing here.
I have to say, I smiled a little when I got to that section, especially with the book on your chest or your diaphragm or whatever that was.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to know about these therapies, though. That's one of the questions I had. What was wrong with them? What happened to you during that process, and how did you know that it wasn't right for you?
That wasn't right because I wasn't getting any better.
Okay.
It's as simple as that. And I remember lying in bed one day and thinking, in some sort of realization, you are not getting well. This has gone on for too long. This is impacting on your life hugely. Look at you. Look where you are. You know, I was in a temporary place. I was not able to work. I had removed myself from my family, mm-hmm. my wife, my kids, my job I'd walked away from, which was my business that I built up over many, many years. And I don't know, it was just so slow in coming to me. But that morning I realized that I needed to do something about it, something different. and that was going and seeing my GP, or MD, I think you call them, and taking some medication and going to see a therapist and starting to really think about what is it that helps people with depression and those and following those things, diet, exercise, all sorts of things. And from that moment on, it wasn't straightforward, as you know, from the book, but I slowly got better.
It's great. And one of the reasons why I think that I was certainly so excited to talk with you is that it sounds like this depression hit you into your adulthood. You had built this business, your law practice, and you were working and helping other people. And, you know, from the outside, one might look at that and say, you know, this is a very successful person. You know, he's perhaps following his dream of working with people and helping people. He's, we haven't talked about your history as a filmmaker, but we will certainly ask you questions about that as well. But, you know, from the outside, others may see you and see that, you know, you have it all, what you're wanting, but yet depression strikes you as well. And we know that, you know, depression knows none of those boundaries. So it will get out there and it can affect anyone. I think that your story is very moving in that sense, that it's, you know, even when you feel like you, or even if you may appear to be at the top of your game, it can still strike you. And
I think especially when you're at the top of your game.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Because that's when you are probably your most ambitious, you're driven, stress is high. You probably, you know, in my case, I had family, children, everything was happening at once. I thought I was indestructible. I said yes to everybody, every request that came my way. I had no idea of my limits or preserving my energy or restoring myself. And, you know, I was at the top of my game, that feeling of, yeah, I can do anything. I was invincible. And of course, that made it a lot harder when I wasn't, feeling absolutely ashamed. And this internal sense of hopelessness and the fall from being at the top of my game to the bottom of my game and incapable was so big that it became very difficult to deal with.
Yeah. Now, talk a little bit about some other supports that you had. You know, that you've mentioned family members and all. What role, if any, did they play, especially early on in the process? What role did they play?
Well, family support is difficult because in my case, I behaved in a way that made it very difficult for them to say, oh, poor daddy's got, or my poor partner's got depression, I'm going to support him. You know, I behaved in ways that were pretty strange to them. I didn't behave normally. I'd been the strong person that was predictable. Suddenly I was removing myself from the family. I was melancholic, lethargic, grumpy, angry. You know, I was struggling to do things. I was slow. I couldn't do things like drive. You know, driving was too hard for me to do. You know, suddenly, you know, I'm sorry, I don't even know there was a phone in the house that I'm staying in. I don't even know where that's come from. So yes, it's very hard it's very easy to say that family should support and be understanding. But the depressed person makes that pretty difficult. So it requires quite an effort on them to really understand. And of course, I remember my kids thought, you know, they couldn't accept that I was depressed. They didn't want to accept that I was depressed. So there was a whole lot of stuff going on. And I kept trying to present to the world, to my friends, that I was okay. So I would present for a short while. You know, I could last for barely an hour of pretending that I was well, and then I would collapse.
Yeah.
So how were they going to know? And I could hide it from them. I could meet them occasionally and, you know, maybe, and not certainly do the things that I used to do, like sport or anything like that, but I could meet them for a one-on-one and then just get through maybe an hour and then get away. And the worst, when I was at my worst, I couldn't meet anyone. I just ran away and hid in another country, so I wasn't even around. But
oh, you left? You left the country?
Yeah, yeah,
oh.
Yeah.
Wow.
I couldn't face anything relating to New Zealand. I couldn't face hearing any news. I just wanted to hear that my family were okay, and nothing. I could cope with no stresses in my life, so I literally ran away and hid in very remote places. And in a way it worked. In a way, if you remove all the stresses, you can actually cope. I could cope better. But of course, the minute I came back,
right, yeah,
it just came back and I was back again. So, you know, I did this roller coaster like ride all the time.
Yeah. Well, that's a terrific description. You know, we of course have an active clinical practice here in our area, and we work with a lot of adults and teenagers who struggle with depression. And I think that you just described it in a very nice way that I think is going to help a lot of people really appreciate what it's like. And I also really like how you talked about the difficulties that the family has with the person who is depressed, especially the person who's depressed who isn't really acknowledging that they're depressed, because there's that resistance, there's that irritability, that agitation, that, again, that just that avoidance and resistance that really is pronounced during those periods.
Yeah. I mean, it's a funny illness, because in the one thing, the best advice for me was to stay close to my family and my support, my community, and get their love and support. But depression was just pushing me so far away from that, to the remotest part of the earth. So it was like this weird contradiction, if you like. The things that you need to get well, depression is really pushing you the far as possible from them. Yeah. I needed help, but I wasn't able to get it. I wasn't prepared to get it.
Yeah. Right. But one of the ironies of this, of depression, is that the very things that you need are the things that are most difficult to do. Mm. It's difficult to eat properly. It's difficult to take care of hygiene.
Yeah.
What advice would you give people, knowing that they're facing that, knowing how difficult it is to do these things? How were you able to force yourself to do that?
You know, one thing that really helped me, it was like a switch was turned on, was understanding a little bit about the brain. The what we now know about the brain, it was just as simple as knowing that the brain can change, that I wasn't, because in depression you feel you're stuck in this forever, that there is no alternative. There's no light outside the tunnel. And I remember reading a book about the brain and how plastic it is, and how changeable it is, and how you can actually do little things which enlist the brain. You can do little things in one part of the brain that can enlist other parts of the brain. And understanding it as a whole series of parts that sort of work and talk, and in depression, they're not really talking properly together. And some are damaged, but it's not like you've just got this massive damaged brain that's always going to be that way. So I think that made an enormous difference. So I started thinking, okay, if I do this little thing, what happens? Yeah, it makes me feel a bit better. And it's sort of building my recovery step by step, with very small manageable things, not taking on too much at once. And of course I did, and I kept falling over, but it worked best if I just did little things and saw the benefit I was getting. And in that, I got some energy and some motivation to try it again. And very soon my brain realized that actually doing those things really was a good thing.
That's great. And the images in the book of that, when you were talking about the brain, are fantastic.
Right. Yeah, I like those.
Did you have sketches? You mentioned sort of drawing and it, as part of your writing and everything. Did you... Well, I think that the decision to go with the graphic novel format as opposed to just the general description narrative was a fantastic decision. And but did you, how much insight or how much influence did you have on the artist's rendering of the work?
Very much. I really wanted it to be my story, and it had to. I drove him mad a bit, but we have a great relationship.
Do you still speak to each other?
Oh, we're best of friends. But okay. Boy, it was a labor of love from both of us.
Oh, good. Good.
It took 3.5 years.
Wow.
We'd never met. We panel by panel, we created the book. And every panel had to reflect where I had been, what I was going through, what I was thinking, what I was feeling. Plus, the environment had to be like I had experienced it. Mm-hmm. And anything short of that, I really struggled with the authenticity of it. And here's a guy I've never met in Turkey.
Where did he live? Where was he living?
In Izmir, in southern Turkey.
In Turkey, wow.
Adriatic coast. And he's a big-hearted, beautiful man who has his own experiences, his own hardships in life, and he brought those to bear. Mm. So, and he had some really tough things to deal with while he was making the book. And but they all came to bear, and they were all part of what we struggled with. And I think the struggle has really produced something far more powerful than it if it had been done in perhaps an easier way. Mm-hmm. But I resisted drawing. I did sketches myself. I sketched through the book myself, but I didn't show those to the artist because I didn't want to really fetter his artistic creativity. I mean, he's a well-published graphic novelist and beautiful painter. And I wanted just to use words to describe what I wanted. And so I did. I used a lot of words and sent him pictures. And he took my words and he turned them into the pictures. And I think that was a great relationship. And then he'd send sketches back and I would comment on them. Mm-hmm. And then he would send color illustrations back and comment on those, and then he would finalize them. Wow. So, yeah, it took us over 3.5 years to create the book. But I really feel when I look at it now, and then, of course, we had to add the words, and I had a lot of words. And slowly the words were chiseled away until there were very few. Now there are very few words because the artist absolutely captured everything I wanted to say. So I look at it. And I didn't do the illustrations, but I feel like it's absolutely my work. It's really interesting. And he feels like it's his work. So we're both very happy.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
One other question about the process. How important was it for you to monitor your progress? You have a number of photos of the graphs that you kept about your mood. How important, because many of our patients don't want to do that. Not our patients. Many patients in general don't want to monitor their progress. They just don't want to fuss with it. How important was it for you to monitor your progress in writing, in a graph?
I found it really important. And it made me see depression clearer.
Mm.
See what I was doing. Seeing the good things, seeing the bad things. And sometimes, you know, like I would go and you know, when I was in the further down the recovery track, I remember going for dinner once. Somebody spontaneously, because making, you know, a dinner date in advance was impossible, but somebody grabbed me and said, "Hey, come on, we're going to come home, watch a video, and have some toasted sandwiches." Something very quick and easy and spontaneous. And they swept me up, took me home, and I didn't have a chance to say no. And we watched a video about the making of Sesame Street character Elmo. Because they have a young child. I went home after that and I was so touched. I felt so good. And I slept well for the first time in years. Mm. And because I was being around people, I watched something that made me laugh. And I'd been loved and fed. And I went away feeling very good. Now, I wouldn't have actually known the impact of that and what it was that made me feel good unless I had recorded it in a mood chart. I noticed the next day, wow, look, my mood had gone way up. Mm-hmm. And then I put a little note by it, had dinner with Sharon. So I noted it, I remembered it. And so therefore this little thing in my brain sparked, okay, it's good to be around people, good people, people that are right for you, not only are safe, but they actually can improve your mood. So the graphs were just huge way of learning for me, monitoring, learning, and when I went down, it didn't sort of worry me so much. Instead of thinking, oh, I feel terrible, what's going on? I could say, okay, I'm at -5 today or -4. It just seemed to be like, okay, I sort of approached it like I was a bit of a scientist monitoring an experiment rather than just feeling it and being thrown around by it. It made it a little bit more objective, and it made me feel a little bit stronger watching it rather than just living it and being thrown around.
Yeah. One of the exercises that I have, I work on with some of my patients who are dealing with depression is when they're feeling good, maybe sort of after you had your dinner with Sharon, I will have them or ask them to write themselves a letter. Their feeling good self write a letter to their depressed self and to remind them of how they felt when it was good. And it sounds like the mood chart sort of does the same thing.
Yeah. And that's why when it came to do the graphic novel, I created characters. I created a depression character so I could actually have conversations with the depression character. Mm-hmm. I created this character, which was sort of me in a wiser form mm-hmm. a few years on. I could have conversations with myself. So absolutely, that's what I did in a visual way, that very thing. And I wasn't told to do that. It just sort of came as a natural thing to help understand and mm-hmm. navigate my way through this difficult period of my life.
Fantastic. Now, you describe in a variety of ways in the book, and I'm sure that as you started getting into what was going on in the brain, as you were talking about earlier, that almost naturally starts to take you into different directions as it relates to treatment for depression and anxiety and things like that. And you mentioned in the book some of the, and you mentioned a moment ago too, the sort of the naturopaths and the homeopaths and those that you saw, and you mentioned some supplements that you tried, and you eventually settled on medication. Tell us a little bit about how you worked through that process.
Well, the things that I were taking initially did not have any impact on my health. They just didn't work, but I stuck with them because I was really scared to take anything else, to take anything that was actually close to an antidepressant or an antidepressant itself. It was part of my denial, but it was also tied up with my father's use of tranquilizers and sedatives over many, many years, and watching his behavior. I mean, you know, that had quite a big influence on my life. So I was trying to avoid his path, which was very heavily medicated. But eventually when I realized I needed to do something, and the homeopathic and the herbal remedies weren't working, I tried a couple of herbal remedies that actually had some research behind them. One was St. John's wort, and it did lift my mood slightly, but it made me terribly anxious. I actually was shaking quite badly from it. So I would stop it and my mood would go down, but my mood would drop, but my anxiety would calm down a little, but I'd stop shaking. So I knew that, I sort of thought, oh, well, these are actually doing something quite to my physical body. So then I moved on to another one, which was called 5-HTP. And I took that for about good 3 years, 3 to 4 years. And I'd read a little bit about it. It suggested that it may assist some people, and the side effects were quite low. And I feel it helped, but I cannot say, because I was doing, at that point, I tried so many other things. I started therapy, really committing myself to therapy. Mm-hmm. I started exercising and doing all the other good things, eating better, getting myself out, seeing sunlight, working with my breath more, breathing properly. You know, there were so many things I was doing that I can't say, and I would never advise somebody to take 5-HTP. And there isn't strong evidence to support it. There is a little bit of quite good evidence, but it hasn't been very well researched. And in the book, I was sort of reluctant to to say anything because I thought, well, people, you know, desperate, they want to rely on, mm-hmm. on what helped me. And I have to say that I don't know if it helped me, but that's what I took.
Okay.
Looking back, I believe strongly that I should have tried early on to an antidepressant administered by my doctor to see if it helped me.
Mm-hmm.
And I regret that because it was many years later and depression really took a hold. And I think that's the thing with depression. The longer you leave it, the deeper it sets and the harder it is to get rid of it.
Yeah, that illustration in the book where you were talking about the chemicals in that affect the way that your brain, and I think the characters in the book are wading through this sludge looking stuff in the brain and says, see, this part over here is healthy, but this stuff is really messing things up. So that's a brilliant illustration of that.
I think stress has had a huge impact on mm-hmm. On my life. And and you only need to read a book. There's a fantastic book out, you probably know it, by Professor Sapolsky,
mm-hmm.
Why Zebras Don't Get Ulcers.
Right.
And he took me through step by step what stress is doing to the body and to the brain. And it's quite a wake up call.
Right. Well, and as you said, you know, during those few years when you were taking the 5-HTP, you were also exercising, which we know helps relieve stress, and you were eating better, which we know relieves stress, and you were, you know, in therapy, hopefully that was helping to relieve stress. So, yeah, it's certain that any combination of those things could have been helping at that time.
Yeah, that's right. But at least I was at the point where I was prepared to throw everything at it. I was really motivated to get well.
Right.
I had stopped. I was still running a bit from acknowledging it to other people, but to myself, I was facing it and wanting to get well and had some motivation. And even in the tough times, I knew I had to keep going. There was no alternative.
It's terrific.
Yeah.
But the therapy thing was huge for me. I have to say, if there's one thing I know was the most significant thing I did, it was to engage with a therapist. And I tried many. Took a while before I found somebody who I really connected with, formed a strong bond with, and that made an enormous difference to every week know I would be back at that appointment in her room, and she was reliable, non-judgmental, listening, supporting, and helping me get through this tangle of depression.
Yeah.
And that was the style that really worked for me. Prior to that, I tried people that had been more instructional and had used, had more tools that they would try. And that style didn't help me. I needed to really, I think I wasn't well enough to do the stuff,
mm-hmm.
to listen, to take on board what they were saying. I really needed to just arrive and just needed to let go in somebody's arms, if you like, figuratively, and express emotionally and later with words just every part of my life that needed to be examined. And I still go to her, and it's been my number one support for sure and my number one reason for getting well.
That's fantastic. You know, we actually did a podcast not too terribly long ago. We did a series on some of the different therapeutic techniques, and you just encapsulated one of the main points we were trying to make, and that is that, you know, there are lots of different ways of doing this, and, you know, sometimes the first one that you choose, sometimes the first one you choose is because it's your insurance that covers it, but just the first one you choose may not be the one that's going to actually work. You need to sometimes see different people and try different things to figure out which one fits best for you.
And I think it's knowing it's not a comfortable process by any means. It's separating the difference between feeling this is hard and feeling this isn't working.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It is a hard process, but I always came away and feeling maybe a little way, a few hours later or the next day, that really helped. That was tough, but that really helped, and I would want to go back. I think that was the difference. Whereas the other therapies for me was like, I don't know why I can't really, I just didn't respond to it. It didn't, I didn't connect with it. I have no idea what my therapist practices. I have no idea what her label is, what her background is. I just know she's there for me and she listens.
That's great.
So it's interesting. It's that human connection and the power of listening and the trust.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we always say that you first of all have to have a therapeutic relationship or some kind of personal relationship, some kind of connection with a therapist, because it requires trust.
Without the without the trust, you're not able to open up and really talk about things. So, did you have? You must be able to see our screen or something. You've kind of gone through all the questions that we had that we really wanted to talk to you about, which was great. Are there other works that you're doing? I know that, again, we kind of alluded to it earlier, that you mentioned in your bio that you've done filmmaking and things like that. Are you looking to take the book in any other directions or anything else like that?
I've got quite a bit on my hands at the moment, just promoting the book and having it launched. It's all pretty fresh. And this is my first big project back into work. So, I've still got my trainer wheels on, we say. I've got to be careful. I've got to look after myself. I just can't do a 10-hour, I can't launch into a 10-hour day. And I may never be able to launch into a 10-hour day. Stress has had such an impact on my body that there's always going to be residual triggers and vulnerabilities, if you like, that will be with me. But that's okay. And I know them and I live with them and I do things that every day keep me well. And that's the important thing. The things that I learned to get me out of depression, eating well, exercise, breathing, having some relaxation techniques, being around good people. I mean, all those things, getting support, all those things are things that I will continue for the rest of my life, because they're good. They're good, healthy, lifestyle practices.
Yes, we should all be doing them. Yes, you're right.
Yeah. So,
and you reconnected with your children.
Yes.
Wonderful.
Yes. Yep. That's just been really. Yeah, they've been very supportive, very proud of me having done this.
We are too. I kept thinking, well, I hope the man reconnects with his children after all this. And so yes. I was delighted to learn that you had.
Well, and a great thing has happened in my life. My daughter has had a baby.
Uh-huh.
And so I now have a grandchild, and tell you, she thinks I'm wonderful.
and we're not going to tell her anything else.
No, please don't. And that's the best thing you can wake up to, this little,
isn't it?
Yeah. This little 2-year-old saying, granddad,
yeah.
What are you doing? Why aren't you here? Why aren't you reading me a story? Why are you on the other side of the world?
We agree. We agree.
I'm coming back.
She will keep you in check. Definitely.
Definitely. Yeah, she does.
Yeah, they're little antidepressants, aren't they? They are. Grandchildren. Yes.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Good. Congratulations. It's a wonderful, very different kind of experience, isn't it? Being a grandfather.
Yeah.
Well, I know we've kind of gone through a lot of your life and history. Anything else that you would like to share with anyone who might be listening or watching this that we haven't touched on?
I think you've absolutely covered it. Everything. It's been a really nice conversation. I guess there's one thing I want to reinforce. It's the strongest thing I've learned is to get help.
Mm-hmm.
Is to be aware that depression will try and sabotage that at every step and will try and isolate you, put you in a room with four walls and no windows, and keep you in bed on your back or whatever, feeling pretty miserable with your mind running around and strongly ruminating about how terrible you are. And that's what depression loves to do. Mm-hmm. So you've really got to see that that is the voice of depression and do everything you can to help you. And the best way is to get support, to get professional help, and to have people around you who can just pull you out of that place and slowly build, you know, build you up again.
Beautiful. Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Now, how can folks who would want to, where can they go to get the book? Where can they go to follow anything else that you're doing?
Thank you. The book is just starting to be released in the US, and it's on Amazon. I know that, and hopefully it will be in some bookshops if all goes well. And I do have a website, which I put a little bit of media on there, and I'll add to it. And that's www.outofthewoods.co.nz. And so that way they can find out a little bit more when I get the time to post some stuff on there. And it has officially been launched and available, but it might just take a little bit. But if people Google it, they'll be able to find it, I'm sure.
Well, I'll get it and put a link in the show notes so that everyone can just click there and follow it and get right to it.
Mm-hmm.
So
great.
But we will definitely be encouraging folks to get it, because again, I think that it's a wonderful take and presentation of the process. And you know I think you used the word courageous earlier. It was you did it in a way that I think is going to reach a lot of people, mm-hmm. and hopefully help other people be courageous and get out there to get the help that they need and to really work to cope with some of these struggles.
Yep. It's funny because I never set out to do that. I just set out to help myself. I'm quite amazed when I hear this back. I think, oh, did I? Okay, that's nice.
In our country, we're entering the end of the baseball season, and we're at World Series time. And so the analogy we would use is you have hit a home run with this book. So
that is so good.
Wonderful addition. Really, really is. It's going to be very useful. It's already very helpful for us. So we thank you.
Oh, well, look, the contribution. It's great to hear, and really good. Appreciate you getting the word out there, because mm-hmm. it's a bit of a tough job.
Yep.
I'm not a major publisher. I don't have a budget to really do this stuff, but this is the sort of thing that will help people help get the book into people's attention. So really appreciate it. And it's been lovely talking to you both. Really, very, very, very nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And certainly anytime we can do anything to help out, anytime you'd like to come back on or anything, just let us know.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Alrighty.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.